Well, interesting, particular message at a place. I want to say up front that I will miss all of you, and that I believe that God is leading you into a greater blessing than you pastor, who can give you full-time attention and care, something I was not able to do. And what I thought I would like to do today is I thought, what do I do? How do you wrap up something? Preach a regular sermon? Just kind of talk and share? And yes, last week, if you were here, you saw me get caught a bit off guard when one of the young people asked me, whether I would miss my last Sunday, I believe. And wasn't ready for that question. And afterward, sat at a table with Bo and Tina, who aren't here today, unfortunately, and I was able to talk to them a bit, and they were saying, well, what do you do? You know, why is it that you can't be a full-time pastor? And as I said last week, and I shared with them last week, and they're saying, oh, now I understand. And I thought, you know, maybe that's what I could do. I'd like to share with you what it is that I sense God is calling you to do. And for your prayers, your encouragement, support, whatever God calls, puts on your heart. But I'd like to just share a little bit. And I'd like to share by starting with some stories. You know, I love to tell stories. So I'd like to share some stories. You know, a family that I knew way back in church in Milpitas. I was in Milpitas for 14 years, just a pastor there. And when I was there, there was this couple. There was a young lady who was in my youth group. She was a senior in the youth group when I arrived in 1986. And I watched her grow up, go to college, get married, have some children. And right around the end of my time there, they were sensing a call on a mission. They went to Germany and were there for 2 years. By the way, all these stories are going to be permission to share. They were there for 2 years. They came back. Their marriage was about destroyed. Their family was crumbling. It had been a horrible, horrible experience for them for a number of reasons. And they didn't know where to turn. And I was able to meet with them, knowing her, knowing him very well as well. I was able to meet with them over several years, along with getting other help. And they are now continuing in ministry, although they are still there in the States right now. But they do great work for God. And I wonder if I sat there with them, as this couple who had been shattered and broken on the mission field, where some of the problem was from the missionaries themselves. In fact, most people leave the mission field because of the fellow missionaries that they serve with, far more than any problems they encounter on the mission field. And I wonder, who was there to help them? Where would they have gone for help if they hadn't known them? And the answer was very few places, actually. I remember meeting with a pastor. I was at a church in, it happened several times, but the one I'm thinking about was in South San Jose, and I was associate pastor there, and someone called me up. It was a very anonymous, secretive phone call asking if I could possibly meet with a pastor and his family from another city. I said, sure, I'd love to help. And he came. They had to come late at night. I mean, late at night. They didn't want anybody seeing him. He was a pastor of a very large church. They found out that their son was involved in some pretty bad things, drugs and other things. And it was tearing the family apart. But as a pastor of a large church, he didn't know where to go or who to talk to. Somehow he got in my name. And I had a chance over several hours to meet, pray with them, counsel with them, and the son. It began a road to reconciliation, and they are in our whole family. And I wondered, if they hadn't gotten my name, I wonder, where would they have gone, or would they have gone anywhere? It's not just that it's about me. It's just about a unique niche that I sense God has called me to. The Iranian people, I've mentioned it many times in my sermons. Actually, back in 2006, I was sent by God on a missions trip with a team of five others. And it was with a group that I was a pastor of a local church, South San Jose, associate pastor. And it was a group that had been won to the Lord through a satellite ministry. There's what was local, it's now moved to Texas, but there was a satellite ministry that did evangelistic programs in Farsi, would broadcast them into Iran. They still do. It's actually on a 24-hour worldwide satellite, so anybody can get it, but they're aiming for Iran. And they were both broadcast in prime time, and from the people who come to Christ through that, they help start churches. Then, about every 6 months, they fly them into a place, a location, which is safe, like Turkey or another country, where they then pray, and they send them back into Iran. They have to memorize their notes because they can't take anything back with them. And then they apply what they've learned to their churches because they are brand new Christianity. And I was sent with a team of five others to pray. And we didn't know what to do. We didn't know why we were really there other than to pray with people, which was great. And that was the beginning. It's October 2006. That was the beginning of this amazing ministry that I have the opportunity to be with the Iran people, which still continues today. But as I have met with them, and as I've counseled them both online and in person on these trips, what I experienced was a lot of brokenness, a lot of anger, especially amongst the women. It is not easy at all being a woman in a Muslim culture. But a lot of that, the church that I worked with has since shattered in Iran. There are a lot of problems, some of which I'll talk about in a minute. And they have had much brokenness, and there is much pain and hurt, and no one knows what to do. And so they find me somehow on the internet, and they start pouring out their hearts and asking, what do we do? How do we start over again when we have been so burned by the church, which was our spiritual parents? And what do we do with them? How do we deal with them? In Austria, working with some people in Austria, working with the church, it's an elder-led church. They don't have a pastor. In that church, they have pastors in Austria. Unfortunately, some of the pastors have really blown it big time and have hurt many churches there. And so many churches have chosen not to have pastors. This one is led by elders. Unfortunately, a lot of the same issues they felt they had with the pastors, like really controlling people, is very much in their culture too, and these elders are very controlling. So working with the church, I've had to work with them, and especially one elder in particular who just didn't know what to do. Given a lot of responsibility of some of the elders who were ill, got sick, and he was one who really was able to open his heart to God, was not this controlling man that any of these men know. And he was just asking, I don't know how to run a church. And so we mentored. I mentored him on Skype, hours at a time, every week, for about a year. I still meet with him. I'll be meeting with him soon, online, mentoring him about how to be a Christian leader. And I wondered, where would he have gone? There was no one for him to really turn to. And then, as you've heard me talk about at times, people really, really broken and shattered. Love working with people with a disorder that's called DID now, dissociative identity disorder, multiple personality disorder was the old name. And I love helping people, working in a home for children in Mexico and meeting a young lady who was the future leader of that ministry and finding out that she had been horribly abused as a child and was struggling with this DID. And she had nowhere to turn, no one to talk to. Those are just a few of the stories that I have the opportunity and privilege of encountering and working with. The reality is that there are many people in this world, especially in missions, in America as well, but in missions, that have nowhere else to go when they need some extra help. Paraclete, which is the ministry that I work under, it's an umbrella, Paraclete Mission. You can go to paraclete.net, paraclete.net. And there it tells the story of Paraclete. Let me just intro a little bit. About 25 years ago, a local missionary, a president of a local mission, actually Carolyn used to work for, years ago, he had retired from that mission, went down to the U.S. Center for World Mission, and you know that it's the headquarters for a lot of missionary agencies work there, or work out of there. I think there was at one point 120. I don't know if they're still at that amount now. And he would go, he went down there to work with them. And what he started seeing was missions groups, missions agencies that had these great callings and great ministries, but they were lacking in something. They might be really, really good at evangelism, but they were really bad at discipleship. They might be really, really good at sending out missionaries, but were really bad at caring for them. They might be really good at helping missionaries raise support, but then they had a really lousy accounting system, which, if it was audited by the government, they'd be in big trouble, because they were just kind of doing it. They grew from something small to something big, and they hadn't taken into account all the changes you have to do. So he kept seeing these fatal flaws in these organizations, and they would die out sometimes. Missionaries would be hurt deeply. And he realized he had this wealth of people that he knew that used to be missionaries, that had retired, that had all this experience, or even people maybe in the business field that could help. So he started going to these people and saying, you know, you've worked for 30 years in discipleship. This mission group has no idea what to do with discipleship. They don't even have a clue. Could you just come alongside of them? I mean, you're retired, you don't need any money. Could you just come alongside of them for free? You don't have any money to hire anybody. And just kind of help them maybe for 6 months develop a discipleship program. And they say, sure, I'd love to do that. And he maps it together. Maybe they would need help with accounting. We find someone from the business world who was retired, was, you know, didn't need any money either. Said, could you just come alongside and set up an accounting system for them and teach them how to run it? And he'd say, sure, I'd love to do that. And he maps it together. That was the beginning of therapy. Kind of a spiritual consultant, spiritual matchmaking service, in a sense. And he started connecting people, missions groups of people, shoring up their fatal flaws. Now that grew, and in 2004, 2005, it really started blossoming, and now it's up to about 45 of these associates, or spiritual consultants, because what happened is, it started becoming more formal. Missionaries started saying, you know what, I've got 30 years under my belt doing this, and I would love to get out of just this one area. I think I have something to give to the whole world. And so they came to Pericles, and Pericles said, well, what we'll do is set up an associate program, and what you can do is be an associate, and this will be your full-time ministry. You will then be a spiritual consultant and help people anywhere in the world with your specific calling, with your specific gifts, or your talents, or your knowledge, or ability. And they started with older missionaries, and then they got to younger people. I was the second pastor, and now I'm the only pastor that's in Pericles. So it was a bit different. Accepting me into this is a bit different for them, even though I was going into mission work at the time. But I found, excitingly enough, that a lot of my pastoral ministries really helped me in counseling the people and mentoring the people I've been working with overseas, because I understand how churches run. And they have needed that counsel as well. So that has been a blessing. That's what Pericles is about. And I'm an associate under Pericles. That's my main work. That's my chief work. I love to come alongside. The idea is that we then raise our own support so that we can come alongside the ministries and it don't cost 7 cents. And they can then bring us along to work for a week to 2 years, 3 years with the ministry. Some have been working even longer. With that ministry can help shore it up, help it to be stronger and better. I'll go back to my trip in Turkey. I went to Turkey in 2006, met all these Iranian people. God blessed that week there as nothing I've ever experienced before. It was just the most amazing week of my life. Saw healing, saw deliverance, saw people reconciled. And about a week later, after coming back and being on this spiritual high, for those of you who go on these trips, you know, you come back on a high, you come back exhausted and on a high all at the same time. And I came back, and the leader of this ministry that we were working alongside, we came alongside of them, no charge to them, to bless them. The leader of this ministry called me up and said, could I meet with you and your pastor, your mission pastor? And I said, sure. So the four couples, two couples from his ministry, two couples, Carol and myself, and the mission pastor, but we got together. at our house for a meal. And they sat down, and this pastor was known throughout the world. He had ministry all over. And this couple that was with him, who had ministry all to Iranian, he had to coordinate Iranian ministry all over the U.S. They sat down and they said, "Mike, what we are hearing now is that our people have changed so much from this trip. We've had other ministry trips, nothing happened. People, our leaders changed so much that we're getting reports people are coming back to their churches. People are wondering what has happened to their leaders. They have changed, they're different." And then they looked at me and they said, "Mike, what you were doing is providing the missing element in missions. This isn't being done, and it's so desperate it needs to be done." And I said, "Whoa." And the pastor who was over missions turned to me and said, "That is exactly true. There's leadership training, there's evangelism training, there's church planning, there's discipleship. But no one is providing this ministry of teaching people about their needs and helping them to find deliverance from evil, supernatural oppression." And he said, "Would you commit to going at least 3 more times with us?" And I said, "If the church allows me, I'll be going to still pastor them." And that started the process where a year later I left the full-time pastor to go to the parachurch. Just so you know, how I got connected with this church, as most people probably don't know, it's just a call or an email, I can't remember which, by some student, Elder Troy, who asked that I just come and preach here. And after, because they were looking for guest preachers, and after a few times they asked, "Could you preach here every week?" And that started 2.5 years ago. So when people say, "How long have you been here?" I say, "Well, it depends. I started preaching here 3 years ago, full time, or every week, 2.5 years ago." And then it was my privilege to do that. But all along, I knew it could only be part time. And we had several talks about that. And we were both up front with each other about that. So I want to tell you, your leadership, you need to honor and respect your leadership. They are great men and women of God, and I truly believe in them, and support them, and am blessed by them. So they have been very forthright, they have been gracious, wonderful men and women of God. So bless them whenever you have a chance. When I was in Malaysia just recently, just as a reaffirmation, I was wondering, "Lord, where do I go from here?" The ministry with Austria had kind of stopped. Other than periodic, the ministry in Iran had kind of stopped. I wondered, "Lord, where are you taking me from here?" And then we got this call from a former Iranian woman who had to flee Iran because the secret security police showed up at her door one day. She was able to see him through the peephole and not answer the door. They didn't come back for a few days. It gave her enough time to get the papers to sneak through across the border with her daughter and flee to Malaysia, where she had lived previously, a few years before. And she had started a church, an evangelist, she had started a church, and she said, "Please come, we so desperately need what you teach in Malaysia." And that started a year journey where I finally went to Malaysia, as many of you know, in October of this year, in September, October of this year. And in fact, I went with a team of two others, and one of them is here right here, Crystal, in our small group, and she actually went with another fellow named Kamran. And we went to Malaysia, and there, traveled around, you've heard my reports, I don't want to explain that a lot, but traveled around Malaysia speaking. But the best time wasn't the speaking. I love speaking, but the best time was afterwards when we said, come up for prayer, if you would like. And people would come up. Now, we didn't know how many people to expect. Generally speaking, in the smaller churches, about 75-80% of people would come forward. In the larger churches, it might be around 50%. But when they came forward for prayer, there'd be 3 or 4 of us up front just praying. And we do what I teach in the inner healing ministry, is you basically just start by saying, "Lord, how do you want me to pray?" And you're quiet and you wait to hear God's leading. And from that, we saw so many things happen. There were people, there were many Christians there, but there were some that were not Christians as well. And they were touched by the Spirit of God. You've heard some of the things that I have shared. But from that, I met in the evening with Bishop Robert Judah Paul. I love his name. Wouldn't you like to have a name like that, Bishop Robert Judah Paul? I mean, he sounds holy just by being introduced, right? And I met with him. He was like the sponsor of our trip. And he said, we're getting calls from many people saying, when's he coming back? Bring him back. We need him. We want him to speak. Bring him back. And he said, you know, but next time I think what I want to do is start you in Singapore. And so you were in Malaysia, now we'll get you to Singapore, and around Singapore and Malaysia, and then the next trip maybe China, India, Nepal, you know, Indonesia, wherever. And I was sitting there as he was talking and envisioning this and asking God, Lord, is this really what you want me to do? Because up to this point I had resisted being a traveling speaker. I love to speak, but that's not my heart. I love the pastor, but it's not my number one calling. And so I was just praying as he was talking, was there with me, and I heard an emphatic no from God. This is not what I'm calling you to do. So I looked at him and I just said, I'm honored, but I need to tell you something. This is not what I'm called to do, to go travel all over the world and speak and preach and teach this. I love the fact that he had a chance in a very short amount of time, sometimes 1 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, praying for people to see amazing breakthroughs, healing, freedom, all sorts of things. One young girl is still in contact with her parents, having severe epileptic seizures. I sensed as I prayed it was more demonic than physical. Prayed about that. The stop, she had one more, taught her family how to pray a little bit more online, and she's since has stopped having it. Sometimes it just happens so quickly. And that's amazing, but there's so much more that can be done when you have more time with people. And I'm not happy with just being there to pray for a minute or 5 minutes with people. That's not what I'm called to do. So I said to Bishop Robert, thank you for this honor, but that's not what I'm called to do. I said, I'd like to share with you what I consider the 4 or 5 point plan that God has shared with me. I said, first of all, I believe that I'm called to go to a place like here, like Malaysia, Singapore, wherever, and teach as I do with some basic inner healing principles. So, for example, when I talk about the one who touched the hem of Jesus' garment, talk about how God in that story is elevating women to a place of great honor and actually saying, as she's being compared to Jairus, who's a man of great honor, a woman of lesser honor, Jesus is elevating them to the same place. He's saying both are equal in my sight, which is a major shame honor message of Jesus. Where I'll talk about David and Saul and how David had to flee from this man who was his spiritual father, Saul, who had adopted him in a way into his family, and yet he had to flee from him for up to 17 years. And what was that like for David? And yet David was able to stay forgiving and pure heart towards Saul in the midst of all of this. How do you stay loving and caring and forgiving toward a man who for 17 years was seeking his death? And so we talked about these kind of issues. I said, that's the first stage, is I need to be exposed, and you've done that for me. Thank you. First stage done. You've sent me all over Malaysia. This has been an honor. First stage done. But my second stage is not to repeat the first stage in another country. God has shown me the second stage of what I need to do is to actually go out, go back to that place and have a more intense inner healing conference on a major healing issue. Like, they call it healing of the soul there. I call it inner healing, they call it healing of the soul, which is a great name. But to do it on an intense issue, so rejection and acceptance, shame and honor, guilt and innocence, grace, and actually mix up the teaching with prayer times. And that stage two is to really give people a heavy dose of some seminars, intense time, 2, 3, 4 days of intense time where they can really find freedom. He says, great. He goes, I love that idea. He goes, what we're going to do is next time you're coming to Kuala Lumpur, we'll all the churches, seminar, and you can just teach that seminar. Wonderful. That sounds great. Third stage. Then from that seminar, tell the people, this is a ministry that needs to be done in this country. Will you help me? Will you join me? and having a follow-up seminar, which anybody can attend who feels they have these kind of gifts, these inner healing, deliverance kind of gifts, where they can learn some lessons about how you do inner healing. Open invitation, that's stage three. Stage four, then, is when we get through that, we then winnow it down, and we select out, through invitation only, people who really do have that kind of a gift, who really are called this kind of ministry. Many people think they are, and once they get in, it's very hard. It's a very, very difficult ministry. I had many people ask me to pray for them in Malaysia, ask me to pray for them that I would impart my gift upon them of this kind of ministry. And I said, first of all, Jesus gives the Spirit gives gift. And second of all, you don't know what you're asking. This is a very hard ministry to do. It's not for everybody. And so, I said the fourth step is that we then choose this team. And then we start training this team and developing this team. And I do it there, I do it online. And then that becomes a team that you can use anywhere in Malaysia. And they can do the ministry. There's teams like that in Iran that do this ministry. There's a team in Austria that's doing this ministry, that training. And so then the fifth step is you take that team and you go to another country and you start the process all over. So let me stay in Malaysia for a while. It's not a country, as we learned, it's not a country that I want to stay in my flesh, but in my spirit, I feel like that is where I'm called to stay. To be in Malaysia several more times and to train this team that then becomes, that becomes the core which goes out throughout the Far East. It's been their ministry extends over six countries. Getting at least to those six countries. Also was invited to Pakistan, which some of my friends are not really happy about, that don't possibly going to Pakistan. But at least those other six countries that I mentioned, Nepal, India, China, Singapore, Malaysia, and Indonesia. Who knows where I could go from here? My goal, my dream, at least, is that this ministry, which brings so much healing to so many people, can extend throughout those countries. I haven't set a date, but before 2020. And that is my dream and my vision, to get out there. You see, a new mission field, when there's a new mission field, which many of these countries are, I mean, there's been missionaries, but for the first time, local believers are being empowered to do the ministry themselves. They're not relying on missionaries to come to them. They're doing the ministry themselves. Carol and I knew some friends in Turkey that went to missionaries, new missionaries in Turkey. They've been there, I don't know, 15, 20 years now. They have had, I remember the first 10 years, I think they had like 8 people they led to the Lord. That was the old style of doing missions. You send people and then they try to learn the culture. And it was successful in a way. But what the new style is now, what God is doing now, is He's calling up local people, and they are doing the ministry, and we need to come alongside of them so that they can do this great work in their country. They know the people. They have the context. They understand the culture. What are we doing going out? I mean, we still need to send out missionaries. I'm not saying we shouldn't do that. But I believe the real emphasis that God is pushing us toward is enabling and empowering, coming alongside of existing local believers and helping them to be stronger. The problem is, it's a big problem, the problem is they are still part of their culture. You grow up in a Muslim culture, there's so many of those ideas still in your head. Muslim men are taught that they are the princes, they are the kings of the family. Women are their playthings. Women do whatever they want. Women are their servants. And even though they become Christians, if they don't get that out of their head just like that. You who are part of two cultures understand this better than I do. How do you let go of things in your culture that really don't belong anymore, that you really realize they don't hold up against the Bible? How do you examine your new culture and understand what really is biblical? What is it? And then take the best of that, take the best of both. How do you do that? They struggle with it. Struggle with it. In the early days, when God starts raising up these groups, I've been talking with my mission president about this, what ends up happening is that the emphasis of necessity is on evangelism. They have to talk about evangelism. They have to build evangelism. People with the gift of evangelism are the main leaders, are the ones people look to, are the people ones people want to be. They want to be evangelists. They want evangelists to come. You know, those evangelists start spreading the gospel because it's weak. It needs to be spread. So evangelists are really highly exalted. They also work in other gifts because they don't have this long-term Christian basis. So they need people like prophets to speak out words from God. And prophets can be a blessing or a curse. They can be one or the other. People with a gift of prophecy and ministry that just as well as use it from God. But they need those, just like the New Testament church. You read the New Testament, read Acts, and that's what these churches are going through. All the same struggles, all the same questions, all the same issues, all the same leadership battles, everything. They are going through those. I'd say Iran is probably like about Acts 12, 13, right around there. If you want to, you're just reading through your scriptures. But they're struggling with it. So it moves from evangelism, and after a while, what happens is they finally start realizing we've got to build discipleship in here too. Malaysia's just there. They're starting to disciple their believers, which is exciting. They have their first Bible college, for example. I taught there with my very last teaching was at a Bible college. It's very exciting to see that, the people being trained to be leaders instead of just being called up and put into leadership positions because they happen to be the most mature person. Maybe they've been a Christian for 3 weeks instead of 2 weeks like everybody else. So they're put into leadership. Now they're actually having the ability to train people. But in the midst of all that mess of trying to figure it out, there's people wounded, there's people hurt, there's people rejected, there's people that leave. What happens to those people? Those are the people I believe God is calling them to help and serve. There's many wounded and there's many lost amongst the believers. I'm not called to be an evangelist. I think what I do can be evangelism, but it's not what I'm called to be. It's not what I'm called to be. Isaiah 49:9 is the verse. If you've ever gotten an email from him, you've seen it at the bottom of the email. He says, I will say to the prisoners, come out in freedom, and to those in darkness, come into the light. I will say to the prisoners, come out in freedom, and to those in darkness, come into the light. So, I wanted to share that with you. There's so much more I can say, but I'm going to stop there about this. That's why I sent a call outside of the pastoral ministry, because it's been a blessing to be here. Really, really has. It's an honor to be here. And your new pastor is blessed to have you as a church. But as much as I am honored, and I would love to stay here, I don't believe God says, I hope you've heard it in my passion, heard it in my words as well. And the story is that the calling that God has sent us to is something unique, something different. I don't think I'm more special than anybody else. I don't think this is the best way to do things. I just believe that the way God has called me to do what He's called me to do. I love what I'm doing. I battle what I'm doing. It is draining. It is exhausting. It's exciting. It's wonderful. It's frightening. It's challenging. It's all of the above. Every adjective you can think of, it's all there. But I absolutely feel 100% convinced that this is what God has called me to do. What God has called me to do. And actually being here has helped me enforce that. I love preaching sermons and I love leading, but really what my heart is getting down and dirty to people who are really struggling, especially Christian leaders, especially Christian ministries and missions groups, and really help them to be what God has called them to be. And so I have the privilege to do that both on the internet and locally and also by taking trips. So that's what I'm about. You can ask any questions. There's an update on the bulletin board out there if you'd like to read more, and I guess people can read for that. I want to say just some things before I sit down here. I guess they're gonna create one. I've already thanked the leaders, Susan, Wanjay, especially Juan. We met many times, prayed, talked, had some great meals with them. I learned how to order steak from them. They're real connoisseurs of good steaks, and I've since told many people the lessons you taught me about ordering steaks. But beyond that, they've been gracious, they've been kind, encouraging, always ready to answer or to find out something. They do a lot of things behind the scenes that many of you don't know about, and so I want to thank you especially
we pray that also all the leaders of this church, Lord, the blessing you are to this church.
I want to thank you to the kitchen staff. They're probably in the kitchen, right? Well, somebody's there, so, and some others, but I want to thank them. Amazing meals every week. I mean, you guys like the dinners? You get these dinners, right? Isn't that great? Amazing meals, amazing fellowship, the setting, just being able to sit and talk and get to know different ones of you. For those I've gotten to know, thank you for the time and spent with you. Those I haven't gotten to know, I'm sure I've missed something. I'm not getting to know you better. But you've been a blessing every week. I don't know how we go home. Just being thankful just to be a part of such a wonderful fellowship. We don't come from a culture where that's part of our experience. We, you know, we would walk out on Sunday morning and go home, or you go out to lunch or something. And here we stay and fellowship. And it's been truly a blessing. It really, really has. I want to thank the worship team. First, you know, Jim Pond, the Blaine. And then with James leading, and just the people singing and playing and coming up, and it's just like a different mix every week. But it always sounds great. It's always amazing. A little too loud for these old ears, but it sounds great. But it's just, I love worshiping with the team. And people I brought with me, friends and who have come and listened, have always come back and said the same thing. So you have a clean worship team, and they're just, you can sense the spirit of God in there. Not just about performance. So I want to thank you all and for viewing, and there's nobody not here. Either PowerPoint person telling thank you. Or just following along with me and putting up with all my confusing ways of doing that. You guys have been an honor to work with. And I want to thank the young people. I mean, you guys don't think you're young, but I think you're really young. But I just want to thank you. You've always been an encouragement to me. I love looking at your smiling faces, watching you play games all night. I accused a couple of texting while I was preaching. Go, no, I'm taking notes. Honest, honest. And they showed me, and they weren't taking notes. So, but I just want to thank you. You are an encouragement to me. You are a blessing for this church. You are not the future of this church. You are this church. Don't ever fall into this trap of thinking somehow we're the future of something. You are the church. You are just like the little children who are here are the church. You're not the future of anything. You are it. You are the people of God. You're the people of God. And though you may only come once in a while, you are a blessing. So keep coming. Keep bringing your friends. Keep telling them about what God wants to do in and through their lives. I know that many of you are involved in KCPC. I'll say it right this morning. Like in front of all the seats, but I'll say KCCC. I used to be involved in Amherst. I used to be involved in University, which is another ministry in colleges. And I want to say this to you, that of the people who stick with their faith and stick with their Christian journey after they get out of high school or out of college and these wonderful ministries that just can focus on you, the ones who stick it out and are the faithful Christians that I see are the ones who anchor themselves in churches now. And I want you to know that. It's not like you can just kind of do the parachurch. The parachurch ministry is great. It's called parachurch. Parachurch is coming alongside. You can do that and be involved in that. And God bless you. And it's a wonderful, I will never say anything bad about parachurch ministry. It's great. I became a Christian through parachurch ministry. God. But I will say this. That I would watch my friends, and I would watch the people I know after high school and after college fall away because they were not active in the church. Because the church is different. The church isn't just about you. Parachurch isn't just about you, right? It's just focused on you and your needs. They have a fun event. They do all the things catering to you guys. But it's easy to fall into that trap of just receiving. Even in the church, even the parachurch ministry, serve. Get out there and serve. Find a way to serve. Whatever that might be. You don't have to be a leader. Serve. But in the church, find ways to serve. I hope and I pray that Pastor Joe would be far better than me in mobilizing all of you in serving in this church. This church needs you. You're not the future of it. You are this church. Get anchored in it. It will be a blessing for the rest of your life. I can guarantee you that just from a lot of experience, that that's a major step. But I want to thank you for being there week in, week out, different ones I know every week, but it is an honor to
to have preached at you and with you. You have made me feel welcome and a part of your family. Everyone feels very much the same way. And I'd just like to conclude with you. Pray for us. Pray, please, for the next steps. Where is God leading us now? It's very odd being a pastor all your life, going out and finding a church. I don't know how you guys do it. It was always done for me. God, where would we go? Oh, we're supposed to go here. That was our church, right? I meant it. But now we've got to go find the church. And that's very strange for us. And so pray for those steps. Pray also that, you know, there's more wisdom and clarity about this mission plan. I give you the 5 steps that I believe God is calling you to. We're setting up the next stages right now in Malaysia. Pray that God will really make it clear. When do we go? Pray that it's not long soon. That's what we got. But pray that God will make it clear when we go and who goes with us. And finally, pray for our support. I need to continue raising support for this ministry. And just pray that God will just continue to show us some people that have it on their heart to support this kind of ministry. It's kind of unique and different. And so it's a bit harder to explain. And so pray that God will make that very clear, who we are to talk to support us in this call. So we can go and not be a burden on the Malaysian believers or whatever else we find. I'm going to let you guys pray for me instead of, and I'll pray for you at the end for the blessing. But say it after me. Yeah, that's right. Amen.
I'd like to invite the steering committee members to come up at this time and put their hands on that mic and send them out. So quickly, if you're part of the steering committee, shared with us his prayer request, and I really love how his calling comes from the Lord God, Isaiah 49:9.